Hello and welcome to this week's episode of What Most People Think. We are recording at 1 o'clock on Monday. You always know that political stuff is happening when podcasts timestamp just to kind of insure themselves against a shitstorm occurring in the interim. The shitstorm that occurred this Monday morning is that the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, did another one of these early morning announcements about immigration, which we'll get onto. But our guest today, with a name like Pierre Novelli, I'm thinking that there's some sort of immigration, maybe in your more distant medium past. I don't know. That French, I can't remember. Are you South African, French? What the fuck is going on?
It's a French and Italian name, and I'm from South Africa, and my mum's parents were Scottish and English. So it's a sort of Western Europe in general, but African by birth.
In this climate, a guy like me aggressively interrogating you like that didn't sound good from my point of view. The optics of that were not cool.
I think the optics are fine because of how white I am. I think then people go, oh, yeah, that's okay. He's one of those Leonardo DiCaprio, Blood Diamond, Lethal Weapon 2 guys. That's fine.
Yeah, it's the okay racism that you can apply. Like South Africans, there are certain races that you can still get away with saying really bad shit about. Australians, South Africans, the French just about.
You can do almost all of them in the right context, but I do find that I used to have a stand-up routine that the irony is that I am an immigrant to the UK, and the people who are the most like rude to me about where I'm from and like where I was born and so on are always like pro-immigration progressives, and it's because I'm a white South African. It got better for a bit, and then after Elon Musk went and did all his fucking Hitler salutes, then it got worse again. So we're under suspicion, and I fair enough, I guess. But Elon's really fucking ruining the brand, man. I've done so much work.
It is so unlike them to have an absolute paradox at the heart of their moral code. Who would have thought it? And we'll also be talking about in the show today, Donald Trump. He's suing the BBC for $1 billion, but he's also starting a fallout with senior people in the MAGA movement. And he has belatedly, after saying Jeffrey who in relation to Jeffrey Epstein, he's now saying, I'll actually vote for the release of these files. So we'll try and pick through what's happening there. And in the Patreon only, Spitting Image, you've probably done as much as anybody to toxify the South African brand. Yep. They've had to withdraw these episodes of their caricature of Paddington Bear. So we'll talk about that. But we'll also ask, you know, who gets to throw a wobbly over their own portrayal? So it's good to have you back, Pierre. How are you been, mate? One of the things we're doing recently is piss take prices. You're a comic. You're out and about. Have you got a piss take price for us? Remember, it's got to take our breath away on some level.
I've made a mistake, Jeff. I've moved to the suburbs now, and the previous owner of the house we're in now, he installed a smart meter. And I never installed a smart meter because I know what I'm like with energy prices.
Yeah.
And I always thought regardless of whether it's an advantage or not to have a smart meter, all it is a little TV set that shows me how fucked off to be about my own radiators.
Absolutely.
Being on.
Yeah.
And that's sure enough. All I do is every time I'm in the living room, I quickly look and see how annoyed I am about the heating.
It's such a good point. It's also, there's a similar overlap here. I mean, we should talk about, we're thinking about piss take prices in terms of retail, hospitality and food. We should also think about the basics. Energy prices probably in the UK is the biggest piss take price. But those smart meters are like, they're in a family with those Apple watches that tell you how your heart's functioning, how your cardiovascular, your capillaries are opening up. Not that healthy to know on an ongoing basis, I would say.
Exactly. And I cannot believe how much energy costs in this country. And like, it wasn't cheap, you know, before the war in Ukraine or before COVID. But since then, it's insane. I mean, it's right up there with the highest in the developed world. And we have our own, resources. There's very few people. There's probably maybe no one in comedy apart from Phil Wang, who is as pro-nuclear power as me.
Yeah.
We could have the heating on. It could be fucking 40 degrees in every household if we just built nuclear power plants when we had the chance.
Why did we stop with that? It was Fukushima. It was maybe the three-headed fish in The Simpsons or something. But we all went off it, didn't we?
Yeah. Mr. Burns, yeah. It's so annoying because like there's so much energy in like, you know, the uranium and plutonium that we already know we have on the Earth. Like we've got the mines. We know where to find it. Mm. there's enough to supply the entire globe's current electricity consumption until the sun explodes. That's how much free energy is in the it's in the floor, and it doesn't make any smoke.
I could do with a sponsor for this podcast. British Nuclear Energy Corp, yeah. Whatever your name is, Fusion Corp. I mean, that sounds a bit too Marvel. Feel free to sponsor this show, but also feel free to employ Pierre as your guy there. That fact alone, till the sun explodes. But of course, Ed Miliband doesn't like it, so we won't be able to do it. Piss take prices, people, hashtag piss take prices, or email me, message me through Patreon, or email me at whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. Adrian on Facebook said £22.50 for a glass of Sauvignon Blanc. Whoa. At the Radisson Manchester Airport. It's just a standard glass.
Fucking hell.
That is the reaction. See, it's got to have that sort of reaction. There was another one. This was my old sparring partner, Avis Santino, said £5.50 for 300 milliliters of water at the Curzon Cinema. It's tricky with that one because I sort of expect to get fucking molested for money every time I go to one of those posh cinemas. So yeah. Does that count? £5.50 for water? I do think it's borderline. It's borderline. Yeah. But the one that's really got people's attention this week, two slices of posh bread at M&S, £4.50.
Two slices?
It's some fancy-ass bread.
We're in the world of the £7.50 pint in central London.
Well, I think sort of expensive pints have become an expected thing, but this is, I can't quite find the name of the bread. But yeah, it's this really fancy-ass bread, but for two slices. But the problem is, maybe the piss take prices, there are just some people sitting there wanting to pay £4.50 for two slices of bread, because I guess it's an anecdote at the very least.
I think some people find it reassuring.
Well, it's like those drinks that have gold flakes in them, aren't they? It bestows absolutely benefit in terms of taste or anything. So there'll always be pricks out. Maybe it's just for rappers. All this stuff is just for rappers who need something decadent for their video. Although, having said that, I've never seen a rapper with just two bits of bread. Wave your bread in the air. New patrons. Remember, you get the podcast early, ad-free, and with bonus content. And this week, if you want to get this podcast twice a week, the only way to do that is to be with a patron, because we've got the patron only coming next week. And Janet Sutton, who I think, because some people have decided that because Apple were taking more money from the Patreon bit, some people have sort of gone through the Patreon website or Android to sign up to make sure that content creators get more of the money. And Janet Sutton, you are a fucking legend for that. I'm not even going to roast your name, Janet. Well, Janet Sutton does sound like maybe, you know, the woman, the head office of a company that is quite feared among the underlings.
Yeah, this will have to go to Janet Sutton.
It'll have to go through Janet Sutton. That's It would be, yeah.
It's also like a really good name for, you know, during elections when they go, but every party is competing for the vote of one hypothetical woman, Janet Sutton.
Sutton woman.
Yeah, Sutton woman.
Yeah, and it actually is about a woman from Sutton. Yeah, that's so funny, every election. Who fucking decides on that? It's Working to Man. It was Once Upon a Time Mondeo Man. It was actually, Mondeo, I think I'm a Mondeo Man, to be honest.
Will I turn on the news and see all the parties competing for the vote of Franco-Italian South African podcasting comedian? When will I be who's pro-nuclear?
It's going to get really, pro-nuclear man. That again sounds like a hero from The Simpsons. Domain Talking Point, our super patron David Domain keeps an eye on previous week's episodes and gets back to us. And he's come back on which supermarkets are the most expensive. And he says, in terms of supermarket prices in general, I defer to which. The most up-to-date information they have is from October. And this is the average price, right? What would you think would be the cheapest off the top of your head, Pierre?
Ooh, what's the, there's one that is only in some parts of the country and it's like yellow and black. What is that one?
Oh, was that, it used to be Netto? I know the one you mean.
Surely Netto's the cheapest.
It might be called something, I think maybe these may have to be nationwide perhaps. Lidl is the cheapest. I would have thought Aldi was like the cheaper version of Lidl, but Lidl is the cheapest. Aldi, Asda, Tesco, this is going up in terms of value. Morrison's, kind of what you'd think really. Sainsbury's, Ocado, and then Waitrose. Waitrose looking around 30% more expensive than Lidl. So that was useful information there. I mean, although I do feel like I've arrived going in Waitrose. So even just walking in there. If there was a guy, if they had a doorman like one of those hotels in London that just give me a fist bump, I'd fucking go there every time. Keir Starmer was talking about the Tories' unemployment rate throughout their time in office as he was desperately scrabbling around for a stat. And I said, what was the unemployment rate that the Tories inherited going into 2010? And it was 7.9%. So that was after the financial crash. And it averaged about 5.1% through their time, through the 40 years, Pierre, 40 years. But it's interesting, one thing I noticed, even under New Labour, even pre-crash, the unemployment level was at 5.5%. But I guess that's before so many people were driving around free cars because they have anxiety. Am I right? Am I being a gammon? Am I being a bit too tabloid?
One of the issues I have with anything involving the ONS now is that they moved it out of London. They moved it up north to try and do the whole spread out the jobs thing, which is, I'm not against in principle, but something like 90% of the ONS's employees said, yeah, no, I've worked for the ONS and I'm like a statistical analysis expert. I'm not leaving London. I'm just going to get lots more money working for a city firm or a private data company. So the ONS is kind of crumbling and hasn't produced consistent, reliable figures for a couple of years now. So, well, they're basing the unemployment figures, what, of a sample of 100? Because now they no longer have the capacity to do a sample of 10,000. I don't know how they're even getting the data anymore. Once you don't have data, you're screwed. There's no country, there's no government anymore if there's no data.
What I love about you having somebody as whip smart as you on the podcast is I believe that you just ONS'd the ONS. Is that what just happened there? Can we Ofcom? I'd quite like to do that. If there's anyone who works in TV production, I would always wanted to do a documentary called Where Do You Get Ofcom, right? Where the fuck do you get Ofcom? Because just the kind of power invested in that organization. Now, maybe it's more logical than I think, or it's more, I know that they have to do a survey about public attitudes every so often. But yeah, if there's anyone in the TV industry, Jeff Norcott says, where do you get Ofcom, you twat?
What most people think.
Okay, the thank you and the fuck you. I'll do the thank you. Last week's tour shows were very nice. Thank you very much. London, sorry for the late start in London. Not my fault. Naming no names. There was two shows at Leicester Square Theatre on Thursday, and the previous show wasn't in a massive hurry to vacate the auditorium, shall we say. So I had a queue going back into Leicester Square, which would be fine, you know, from an ego point of view. But, you know, I get a slightly older punter. That can't happen. You know what I mean? There'll be people fucking suing me for their dodgy knees. But that was a really lovely show. Then I did Bridport, which was nice, actually, even though I'd berated them for it not selling as well as a world-class act of my caliber deserves. I've done this thing now, Pierre, is I get on the front foot. If a place isn't selling well enough, I hold the whole location accountable. I think we spend too much time kissing these places' arse. I can't wait to come there. I can't wait. No, I'm coming there for work. And it better fucking pay. Seriously, otherwise I'll never come back again.
Yeah, put the effort in. Get some friends. Get a gang together.
It sends out a message to all the other areas that are thinking about dicking around with me. And then Exeter last night, what an audience that was. That was insane. They literally cheered when the lights went down. That was the first one of the tour of that, maybe ever. So that was lovely. And then the last four dates on the autumn tour are Maidstone on Wednesday, is pretty much sold out. Leicester, which is getting there. Crawley, we've got 500 plus in, but it's a big room. And then London, the final date on the 29th, Saturday the 29th at Leicester Square Theatre. Again, this one's 7 p.m. starts. There's no chance of it starting late, and it'll finish, it'll be done by around 9 p.m. so you can go for dinner, have a drink, it'll be nice. And then on to next year, do check out Live Nation, loads of dates in next year, a lot of them starting to fill up. The fuck you, Pierre.
So I in this place that we've moved to, there's a garden shed, and the garden shed's got an aircon unit in. The last guy put an aircon unit in. It's a kind of shed office rather than a shed.
Yeah,
it turns out aircon unit needs to be serviced once a year, right? Fine. Okay. I'll figure out what the fuck that means and who I need to do that. And the guy had left behind contact details for his aircon guy. This takes 3 months, by the way, to book this guy from when I start talking to him. So first of all, fuck you for that.
Just an aircon guy. There's a 3 month waiting list.
Not a waiting list, just a chaos factor of him not replying, not reading things. Just madness. It takes 3 months to nail this guy down. And he says, I'll come through at like 1 o'clock. I record my podcasts in that shed, right? It's a studio. So if I'm in there recording, he can't be in there fucking around making sure we had done all Die of Legionnaires. So he says, our morning job canceled. So can we just come around now at like 10:30? And I said, well, No. Booked in for one. It'll only be empty at one. Sorry to mess you around. I'll get back to you next week. Just didn't come. Just canceled the whole thing.
Get yourself a manual trade. These guys are getting a bit cocky, I would say. I've always spoken up for the humble British tradesmen, but they're so oversubscribed to work that they're sort of bossing it a little bit now. I mean, it was interesting that Labour said they inferred anyway that working people were people on salaries of under 46 grand a year, which would of course exclude pretty much every plumber, electrician. Yes. So it might include actually, you know, some people with degrees, but now not include people who actually fix and build stuff, which maybe is fair enough. Maybe that is the important shit after all, is people that can build and fix things.
I just can't believe that I'm having to like text this guy and rearrange with him like I'm trying to have sex with him, like I'm trying to seduce him. He's hard to get. He's, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't check my phone. It's all very flirty. It's all very mysterious. I'll go with someone else. I can't beg to hire people for things. I need to not die of Legionnaire's disease. That's all I dream of.
You're almost like a woman in her late 20s now, where once you've committed time to this relationship, you can't blow it up because you just have to start the whole process again. And well, you know, you're not getting any younger.
Yeah, what if they're all like this?
Okay, we're going to talk about immigration now. Home Secretary's come out with some big plans and we're going to pick those apart. So as ever with this government, everything happens in the morning. Shabana Mahmood, who I think in fairness seems quite proactive, I think, compared to Yvette Cooper. I mean, I don't really know what Yvette Cooper did while she was Home Secretary. I'm struggling to get a handle on what the Yvette Cooper era was all about. I think one of the best moves actually that Starmer's made is just farming her out to Foreign Secretary and getting Shabana Mahmood in. I mean, what's your impression of Mahmood? She just seems quite decisive and like a person of action.
Yeah, I definitely. And also, she seems like she doesn't have the disease that the whole government has, which is to be insanely afraid of sort of 30 backbenchers for reasons that I can't quite figure it out. I think my theory now is that now is the time to try and shove through a bunch of difficult legislation, because a few months ago, the backbenchers could say, well, you know, you can suspend me, but then I could become independent and I'll get all this praise and I'll get to hang out with Jeremy again and I'll have a lovely time. Now all of that's imploding in a really horrible, embarrassing way, and there's infighting and it looks like a shit time. So now that's back to being a threat again, right? It's no longer like a fun holiday.
Oh, yeah, no, your party, I think, are sort of suing each other, and, you know, the whole live action People's Front of Judea thing is a sort of rolling car crash. I guess people might say the Greens, you know, Zach Polanski, who seems to have emerged just by having a couple of good months of doing some good appearances on podcasts and on the sofa. I mean, this is how politics has kind of led that. He's a little bit like Farage, is that it's a kind of, we like the cut of your jib politics.
Yeah, it's vibes based.
But you know, when it comes down to what the Greens say defense policy is, which I suppose is to fire compost at Russia, you know, I mean, I know that's a bit.
They used to have a bunch of policies about like enlarging the NHS budget to pay for homeopathy and stuff, like real hippie shit that they smuggle through because no one reads past recycling. Whereas if you read the whole thing that they put out, there's some fucking crazy stuff in there. And they are, of course, unlike the Greens in Germany, who I respect, who know about science, they're anti-nuclear.
What, the British Greens are still anti-nuclear?
Yeah. It's insane. It's free energy, and they're anti it because of Mr. Burns and the fish from The Simpsons, like you said.
I get the impression that British Greens would be like, first three pages of manifestos recycling, and after that, no one's ever read that far, but they've just put like polar bears, animals, and just, you know, like those adverts where they try to get you to pledge money for pet sanctuaries.
It's that in dream catchers, man. I have no time for it at all. This is the thing, is you have two types of green you can choose from. You get the science greens, like in Germany, where they go, look, the weather is strange and we have the free electricity if we want it, okay? And you go, yeah, this is very reasonable, fair enough. None of you are wearing sandals at all. And I'm saying that wearing sandals right now, so I'm a hypocrite. Then you get the other greens, which are the, you know, the Lib Dems were too uptight for me. I live in Devon and I sell crystals. And those are the ones that we're about to all vote for. Why can't we have the science-flavored ones from Germany? Then, you know, maybe we could get some cool stuff out of it.
Yeah.
Instead, we're going to triple the NHS budget for, you know, copper bracelets or whatever the fuck. and get no more free electricity because they do things like burning biomass instead of nuclear, and biomass makes more smoke and particles than coal. It's just that it's called biomass.
But maybe they'll, instead of the FTSE, they'll have like a karma index that they'll say, look, yes, the currency has plummeted, but karma is up 10 points.
What most people think.
Just get on to what Labour are saying then. So there's this eye-catching rule now is that if you arrive illegally or you claim asylum, even if you're successful at claiming asylum, it will be 20 years until you have settled status, right? So this implies a constant. I think they'd already said something like this, but maybe they just wanted to re-announce it in a more eye-catching way. I think they'd actually said before that you'll never have it if you arrive illegally. Oh, if you arrive illegally. So this applies to people that legally have got asylum. So the idea of reassessing whether or not the country somebody came from is still war-torn. I do think that that is going to a lot of the public, be filed among the why wasn't that already happening kind of file, right? So it's that weird thing where Labour announcing something that they want a lot of credit for, where maybe to the public that seemed like the minimum spec.
It's the two different worlds. It's the world of how people presumed the system was already working versus the world of Westminster, where they already knew all these rules and also thought that they were fine. So it's like every now and then the government announces, you know, we finally made murder illegal. And the public go, hey, wait. What do you mean? And they go, no, technically murder wasn't illegal before. It was just illegal to make someone else stop being alive. So we've renamed it. And it comes across as chaotic and it undermines people's faith in things. It is strange that, I mean, even Tony Blair is going around doing the rounds saying, look, the asylum system we have is for a kind of 1930s version of Europe that doesn't exist anymore. And I mean, one of the issues that I have with some of the criteria is that, well, I have an issue with the word migrant because I don't know what it's supposed to mean, because there's asylum seekers and there's immigrants. I mean, we are immigrants.
Mm. And there's also legal asylum seekers, and there's also people arriving in the country illegally. There's economic migrants.
Well, yeah.
That is the issue at the moment, is that the anger over the illegal arrivals is kind of polluting the discourse to a degree. But, you know, Shabana Mahmood said that one of the things that caught my eye that she said was that, you know, we need to have public faith if we want to have an asylum system at all. So is that her sort of firing a shot across the bows? Like, if we don't do stuff like this, it's absolutely guaranteed that you'll have reform. And she's trying to sort of sound the warning that what reform might do, which is they might reject the right to any asylum application of your federal state.
I think that's right. And I think that they're fighting a rearguard action against that. And also part of the problem is that there are people who ideologically believe that an acceptable reason for not sending someone back to a country is that the country's shit to live in. And unfortunately, a lot of countries are shit to live in. Like, there's not a lot. They say, oh, but if you send this guy back to Lagos, where he was a struggling market stall trader in Lagos, of which there are many. Yeah, that is a much worse life than he's going to have here. So that logic holds up. His life over there is much worse, and he is in danger because maybe he's from a minority group in Nigeria that he moved into Lagos to try and make money for his family. Yeah, that is shit. It's a terrible situation, and it's bad, and he will be in more danger there than here. But that's true of 5 billion. People, because the world is a horrible, horrible place.
Yeah, no, it's pragmatism. But then those 30 Labour MPs that you spoke about, maybe more, because some of them have already got out, and some of them have used the word disgust about some of these policies. Are they going to be able to withstand this? Because these younger Labour MPs, they kind of came to political consciousness in a time where it was terrible to be right wing adjacent on anything online. Yeah. So is it? I don't know whether or not this stuff needs to be voted through, but at some point, you know, these are the people that sort of knock back reasonable welfare reforms. Do they need to call their bluff at some time? You know, I know it doesn't sound like a very Keir Starmer thing to do. Say, right, fuck you lot, put up or shut up. Yeah, bitches. Like, to actually put it to a vote and say, yeah, vote it down. And then, you know, let's see what happens after that.
Yeah, it has to. And that's why I think if there was a time to do it, it would be now when your party look unappealing. And what happened to the old whips, like the ones that could scare the shit out of anyone? I mean, it seems like the backbenchers run the show. They can't get anything through.
But the problem with Morgan McSweeney, da, 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 da. Do you know that song? Oh, you might have no idea while I'm doing that tune. It was a cop show. It was a cop show from the 70s. I'm trying to make it a thing.
Oh, the Sweeney.
Yes. So I'm trying to make it a thing. It might have been a lack of tunefulness on my part, but I'm trying to make it a thing that every time you say his name, I want people to think of that, because I do believe that he's been running around like a 70s cop, sliding across bonnets, fucking arresting the wrong people in a lot of cases. I mean, there is some stuff here which, look, he's going to be loaded for people on the left of the party, maybe even on the right of the party, maybe even some of the soft left of the Tory party. You know, talking about, well, if people have financial means, you know, these lawyers and stuff, housing people cost money. They're talking about potentially removing jewellery if people have any financial asset upon them, whether that be cash or jewellery. I guess I do, you know, thinking about the history of Europe, taking jewellery off people. I mean, that is...
This is the thing, is that that's such an idea put forward by a fucking spad in a meeting where there was one example they heard about where someone was smuggling XYZ very valuable thing with them. And then they haven't thought about how it looks, and they've put this fucking Nazi policy into the public domain. They didn't even have to introduce that. You know what? If you can make it all the way here through all the people smuggling gangs covered in fucking emeralds, you deserve the emeralds. Enjoy. They're yours. That's
I mean, you really have to look at the people smuggling gangs and go, what fucking kind of gang are you here? You should have jacked up the price immediately. I mean, I do think, like, the question about how people are able to afford these several thousand pounds that it costs is a legitimate one. I also think that when people say, oh, when they get here, they only have £7 a day to live off, you go, well, no, but also, you know, accommodation and meals are covered, right? There are a lot of people currently working on minimum wage that probably don't have much more than £7 a day spare, right? So actually, it is both not a lot of money at all. I'm not saying that, like, an asylum seeker's life is a great material life, but that equally is still materially perhaps as good or better than some people that are working minimum wage.
But this is the other issue, is that you get the parties who argue, and with some, you know, with some legitimate points, of course, like the Greens or the Lib Dems, who say we should be nicer, or the people who are maybe on the left of the party of Labour or backbenchers, that we should be nicer. And I agree. But they're also the people who block any new construction. So you say to them, okay, yes, I agree. There needs to be dedicated accommodation. There needs to be huge, huge processing facilities if we're going to do this properly. And we're going to take all of this seriously, like an actual grown-up country. And then they block all the construction and they say, well, not in my constituency.
Was it a Green Party MP that got found out for doing that? Where she'd argued about, you know, to be more welcoming of asylum hotels. And then because there hadn't been an application or the research done in her own locality, rejected it and said, but what about the effect on my constituents? Go, yeah, that's the whole fucking argument about asylum hotels. Okay, as I say, I'm getting towards the end of my autumn leg of my tour, and then 2026, there's, I think there's 37 dates, so do get on Live Nation and check it out. And Pierre, I know you do a lot of podcast stuff and live stuff. What have you got coming up?
I'll be doing a Soho Theatre run in London in January, and then a national tour after that, and a pop-up in Dublin as well. And I do a podcast called Bud Pod with Glenn Moore, and then me and Glenn Moore and Sarah Keyworth do a podcast called Button Boys, and that's about gaming. I don't know if you've got a big gaming contingent listening, but if you like gaming, you don't have to be a super fan. You don't have to know a million things about it or even really play games. Maybe you just used to and now you've got too much on. But if you want to keep up to date.
Do you know, I reckon that maybe that's the next installment of the father-son John Lewis trilogy. Is that he basically... like his son buys him a SNES, like a Super Nintendo. And he just goes through all those things that he used to love. And then it ends up with him just buying him a fucking stick.
Yeah.
Because once upon a time, that was the way that he amused himself. And what's the name of your tour, Pierre?
You Sit There, I'll Stand Here.
I like it.
And it's about moving from a flat to the suburbs and worrying that I'm going to become a reactionary.
Do you know what? Even in the first bit, I'm thinking, how old are you now?
I'm just about to turn 35. Soon I'll be 35.
It was music to my ears hearing you, A, moan about the smart meter, then about getting tradesmen. Mate, welcome to the club. It's a beautiful transition. Okay, we're going to talk now about Donald Trump. First up with the BBC thing, which I covered to an extent last week, but the number that he's suing the BBC for is 1 billion. And it's just suspiciously round number, really. What is the legal argument, Pierre, for a billion? Like, surely at some point there's a filtering process of which actions are deemed viable. is there some point where you go a billion, you go, all right, why a billion? Like, because you did sort of, you know, it was bad what they did, but you did sort of still win the election. Why a billion?
I think part of this is in America, the way the legal system works, if you sue someone, the damages, I think, are decided by the jury and not by the judge, or in some states, maybe.
That's fucking risky, isn't it?
Well, this is it. So that's why sometimes, you know, the jury will say a billion, because that's what you said. That's what you're suing them for. So if the jury just go, if you're lucky and the jury just go, yeah, a billion sounds about right, then I think it can get moderated down on appeal. But that's the anchor point, right? You want a high anchor point.
Okay, well, that's interesting. And that's also particularly parlous, because I think I've discussed many times in this podcast that the public general aren't as across the difference between a million and a billion as they arguably should be. Hence why Labour carried on with the 22 billion. And I was like, that does not land in the way that you think it does. Most people don't think a billion is that much more than, they know it's significantly more, but not to the exponential scale that it actually is. So that's slightly worrying. I mean, I just find, like, you know, it's one of these moments where I find myself between kind of like, you know, the online right and the left that just want to say, eulogize about the BBC, and then the people, which I don't, you know, I think we need to address its problems. But then there's the people on the online right that seem openly sort of salivating over the idea of Donald Trump becoming even richer and the BBC being bankrupted. And I sort of think that's also like a weird, to not think the BBC should reform at all is weird, but to want taxpayer or license fee money to go into Donald Trump's pocket, also a bit fucking weird.
I think it's also because people have this idea that the BBC is run like whatever the company is in Succession, where there's like the Logan Roy of the BBC and he decides everything, and if we can just get rid of him. Whereas it's so separate. So, okay, if you have a problem with BBC News, then none of the people you're annoyed at work at Radio 3. You know, it's so separate. They don't even meet. Most of these people.
It's very difficult for me to comment on it, because I do bits for the BBC and then people say, well, you're just trying to feather the nest of it. They're not, by the way, they're not that across stuff that they would know what I say on this podcast.
Look, to anyone listening who thinks that's how the BBC works, you have no fucking idea how unaware they are of anything anyone else does. And secondly, if you knew how much the BBC paid, you'd be saying, twig the nest, not fucking feather the nest. It's a John Cleese joke. He said, I do a lot of charity work, mainly for the BBC. He said that when they were making Monty Python. They didn't make that much from Monty Python.
I don't know if it's absolutely institutional in the way that it's supported by deliberate systems create bias, but there is a lean in the BBC. You only have to walk around the building at New Broadcasting House. It definitely leans a certain way. I think, you know, this is slightly old fashioned cliche now, but there's a lot of different milks in those fridges. and you know, I've worked on, and this wasn't at the BBC. This is the other thing that people, you know, is how much stuff is made outside. And, you know, within TV generally, they're probably, you know, in comedy, it's definitely a liberal left bias. I remember, you know, having to be, you know, with one production, having to argue quite strongly for what I thought was an obvious story about a then shadow minister for Labour, you know, as a proper target for satire. And I felt at the time that the person was trying to stop that story because it was just, for the simple reason, it was damaging to Labour. But that wasn't in the BBC. That was a production company, right? And the good news is, happy ending, the joke did get in, you know, fine. But the amount of time I had to spend arguing that simple single point sort of spoke to the truth. So, yeah, it's just another place where I find that the online right is so squarely right, all feet in this camp. But you go, I don't know if Donald Trump bankrupting the BBC is going to be a great outcome. Sorry, right wing, shoot me down as a shill. I said it.
Destroying a British institution for a foreign billionaire isn't very patriotic, but then
if it was like for a really poor guy in the States, right, who'd been defamed by the BBC, I would make maybe that's quite funny if the BBC does go down and there's some farmer from fucking Utah. But Donald Trump's already got quite a bit of money.
What most people
think. And maybe, you know, Trump, a lot of this is he wants to be in the news for different reasons because he's facing a lot of pressure at home. Once he got elected, he's very big on release the Epstein files, got in and then started saying Jeffrey who? Literally. I mean, he said, is it what? People still talk about Jeffrey Epstein? What, the paedophile with a fucking island where royal family members went, yeah, I think we're going to be talking about that for a while, mate. I tell you what, like, if there's one thing that the absolute hardcore MAGA crowd need to believe and will always believe is that there's fucking paedophiles everywhere. So that's like a core MAGA belief. So you can't just tell them to look the other way. And so Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's a congresswoman for the Republicans, she was like, released the files against his kind of will. And then he called her a traitor, right? And this, you know, it's in these sort of splits now, because now Trump's come out and said, well, actually, yeah, no, you know, fuck it, vote for the release of all the files. It's the first time I feel like he's absolutely fallen out with his usual allies.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, once you're being called unreasonable by the lady who believes in demons and Jewish space lasers, then something's gone wrong, you know. If she's the one being presented as having a sensible outlook, there must be something in there. Like, he wouldn't, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I don't think there's a smoking gun in there, but there's just going to be a bunch of grubby stuff. I mean,
embarrassing, yeah.
Yeah, stuff about fucking your secretary, or it'll be something like that. I don't think that he's a time-traveling demon pedophile or whatever the hell the new theory is.
I never knew they did time travel. That would be, God, imagine being like such a sex offender that you actually have to sex offend in different time zones as well, or eras. The stuff that was released last week, I didn't think was that bad with Trump. What it sort of seemed to show was that Jeffrey Epstein had been kind of excommunicated by Trump and held a grudge, right, based on what I saw there. But, mate, you know, that's obviously not the end of it. I mean, the Democrats pushing so hard for this. Is it because, like, it's a Hail Mary, like, fuck it, if there's nothing there, nothing ventured, nothing gained, and if there is, then that's the beginning of his yes. sort of tenure as a lame duck president? Is that the strategy?
I think so. And also, just the more you can talk about it, the better. You almost want it to drag out, because it means that it'll just be on everyone's minds for longer, whereas if it was all done in one go, it must be something worth doing, because with Donald Trump, you go, oh, he's corrupt and he has affairs and he's like not nice. And he, you know, but all this stuff is already baked in. We knew this in 2016. This is not new. It's just different instances of it. So it must be something at least one degree above the usual scumbaggery, where you're going to go, oh, actually, that's bad.
I'm just thinking what it could be. You know, like, sometimes somebody did, like, it's like finding out somebody was, right, if you found out a celebrity was doing coke, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, actually, that's not that big a story these days. But say it was, you know, back in the mid-noughties where that was a front page scandal. You go, oh, okay, that's quite bad. During the Queen's funeral, like,
yeah.
Do you reckon it's one of those? Is it's like during 9/11, like, even once the first tower went down, he was getting oral sex in a hotel room?
Well, because he used to be a New York Republican, or like Donald Trump, right, which is a Democrat everywhere else. And he was happy being friends with the Clintons, and he was he came across like a Democrat and said he was voting Democrat. So maybe it's a bunch of emails of him saying really pro-Democrat stuff. It's actually not even scandal-based. It just shows that he's a flip-flopper, or I don't know.
He said some really liberal stuff in the past. Like, that would be the great scandal.
Really, really nice things, yeah.
Like, gender's a construct.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, male privilege has to end. Meaning that would be a massive shock. I just think, like, he is maybe coming up against that simple thing in politics of what you've promised versus what you can deliver. He's now talking as well about, you know, well, we need certain migrants because they have certain skill sets that we need for high-tech battery construction. And that's kind of not very MAGA, is it? To say, now, it might be what the American economy needs. It might be pragmatic as they train their own workforce. But the guy that said American first and put in the tariffs and all that kind of stuff, suddenly go, well, we need these fucking Vietnamese kids because you're not smart enough. I mean, there's one interview where that is the inference. So I just worry with Trump is that he won't lose well. Like, if he starts to become unpopular, the things that man, do you think he's ever in his whole life and gone, you know what? Yeah, fair enough. Fair point. Do you think he's ever said fair point?
I think he's probably said it in amongst the 100 other things that he said in one really long sentence that didn't make a lot of sense. But I don't think he's ever meant it.
Well, maybe when he gave himself credit, whereas people say I made the fairest point. Some people say I made the fairest points of them all when I look in the mirror. Okay, right. For the patrons now, we're going to be discussing the Paddington estate getting some satire about that fucking bear pulled. But for the rest of you, it'll be the end of the show. Okay, so if you do want to listen back to that, it did end up with me calling Paddington Bear an establishment prick. So if you want to know how the hell we got to that, then do join the Patreon. You can listen to all that extra content. Pierre, mate, it was a pleasure. It's been far too long. Please come back on soon.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Remind people, first up, your two podcasts.
Bud Pod with Glenn Moore, which is just a kind of stupid, funny one, not really about anything too specific. And then Button Boys with Glenn Moore and Sarah Keyworth about gaming. For people who just game for fun or just a little bit, or maybe you gamed more when you were young, when you had time, and now you don't have to be a mega fan of gaming. You just have to like video games in general, and we discuss them.
Yeah, that sounds like me. And then obviously the Soho run of your show, and then you're going on a UK tour. You're not one of these guys that like does 40 dates in Soho and then one outside of London. Please tell me you're going around the country.
No, I'm going around the country. They let me do 12 dates in Soho, 13, something like that. And then I do sort of 25 around the country, something like
okay,
that.
Okay, I'll just about let you go with that ratio. Remember, this is what most people think. There's definitely underscored by populism, this podcast. You just about came in under the threshold. More out of fucking London. I mean, I come from London, by the way, so this is completely hypocritical. Pierre Novelli, thanks very much for being on What Most People Think. And just a reminder that if you want a second episode of the show this week, you've got to be a patron. It'll be the patron-only episode, and then there'll be two episodes next week, because I think it's the budget.